This is The Biz of Wealth. Challenges, rumblings, and evolution of the wealth management industry.
Welcome to The Business of Wealth. Today, I had the pleasure of talking to Matthew Beals. He's the Chief Operating Officer and Chief Information Officer for Bolton Global Capital. In this role, he oversees the back office operations, platform development, infrastructure expansion, information systems, and cybersecurity. He also works closely with Bolton's executive team on business development and company strategy. Prior to his role, Matt was Manager of Technology and Business Development for Bolton Global Capital, where he managed information systems, cybersecurity, and supported new advisor acquisition. Matt holds a BS in mathematics and statistics and an MBA, both from the University of Massachusetts at Amherst. He holds a FINRA Series 7 and 24 licenses. We had a great conversation about what makes a good asset management platform and how the asset management strategy is evolving in the marketplace. Without further ado, I hope you enjoyed this episode.
Okay, Matthew, welcome to The Business of Wealth. Thank you for being here.
Thanks for having me, Alejandro. I appreciate it.
Nice meeting you.
Likewise.
How has the pandemic treated you the last few months?
You know, I got to say, although I know there's been a lot of hardship out there, at least for me and for our firm, Bolton Global Capital, we're fortunate to have not only survived through the pandemic as it continues and throughout the lockdown, but actually we're thriving in the face of it, which has been, we were just very fortunate. If you look at our numbers over the past 12 months, we're actually, our overall AUM as a firm is up 8%, which is pretty incredible. At the lowest point of the pandemic, which I think was March 23rd, that's kind of where the markets bottomed out. We looked at our AUM numbers, and as a firm, again, our overall AUM was down a little over 17% compared with over 30% in the broad markets. So I think that was sort of a testament to, the relatively conservative nature of our client base and what they're invested in. So very fortunate. And as I've talked to our advisors throughout this process and throughout this time, and we've seen this also echoed in our home office, is that they've never been busier, with client engagement being up significantly. I think, when things are good, client engagement tends to dwindle because, everything's going fine. But when there's a crisis and when the markets start dropping, that's where the engagement happens. And we've seen that for sure. It's been good. I mean, being busy at that time is a good problem to have because you're really engaging with your clients and keeping the conversation going and providing that level of service.
Well, yeah, the key KPI here is, how much money left the company. So you're saying it happened. So that talks to the capabilities of engagement of your advisors, I assume.
Oh, precisely. I mean, I think engagement is key, providing that level of service to your clients and retaining assets is really it. So, we definitely saw that across the board, is that our advisors really, they have close relationships with their clients, but the communication was definitely there and the assets, stayed because the clients know that the advisors, care about them, care about their money and are watching it carefully.
So I know you're not in an advisory position, but personally, everybody that comes asks you, because you are in finance and, I'm sure your social circle comes to you and says, what should I do? what's happening? What's going to happen? Basically they always tell you, okay, read the future for me.
exactly.
What have you been telling them?
It's interesting, and I think that it's important to admit when you don't know something, and I think that like you said, I'm not an advisor myself. I work with advisors. I'm on the management side of a broker dealer and RIA. So I'm at a different, perspective than the advisors, but I do interface with them all the time. And, working with them, working with our research partners, there was a whole lot of, we really don't know where this is going because it was, the drop was very much fear driven. And at that point, the fundamentals don't make sense. And a lot of market data doesn't make sense because people are acting on fear and on impulse. So I gleaned from talking to our advisors is that, just, you know, be there for your clients, talk to them. You know, I think communication was key throughout. I think, you know, just sort of understanding that, you know, to, I guess, you know, this phrase has been thrown around all too much, but we're all in this together and we'll get through it. So it's more about, you know, trying to get through and make sense of a situation where there wasn't a lot of sense in the markets. And then, you know, being there throughout when the market kind of bottomed out, leveled off, and then started rising again. So again, it's really, you know, you can't predict the future. and if you say that you can, then there's something wrong. But it's really just about, you know, being there for your clients and providing the level of service throughout an unsure time.
So talking about predicting the future, what do you think about the wealth management industry in general? And the business model for wealth management? I know you are in operations, you're running the engine of Bolton. As a business model, where do you think it's going?
Well, so a couple of thoughts on this. You know, one of which is that from a high level, you know, we have seen in certain parts of the market, and it's, you know, for certain client segments, the move obviously to fee-based advisory. So I think that, you know, that's been from a headline perspective, that's been out there. You know, we've seen the numbers, but I think that, you know, I'm not in the camp of saying that everything's moving to all in fee-based advisory. I just don't think that's the case. What I see happening is the hybrid model is really where things are going to land because, you know, from an all in fee perspective, you're looking at, you know, every household or client looking at their kind of their all in cost structure of their, you know, their assets. You know, clients can do the math. So, you know, for some, it might make sense based on the situation to do the all-in fee-based model, and that's fine. And for some, it doesn't make sense. You know, I think of the example of the, you know, extremely high net worth, conservatively invested, you know, invested in a lot of individual fixed income securities or more conservative investments where there's a lower turn, lower transaction rate. You know, for them, depending on the client, their situation, sometimes it makes sense for them to be in a transaction model, and that's fine. I think that some firms have focused on all-in fee entirely, you know, exclusively, and that's their prerogative. At Bolton, we think that hybrid is really where it's at, especially in the higher net worth, ultra high net worth space, where we've seen clients really, you know, carefully select which model they choose. And you know, from our perspective, we want to be able to offer both, right? We don't want to silo ourselves into one or the other.
How would you define like a winning operational structure? How would you define that if all the wheels are, you know, spinning the right way, what does it look like in terms of asset management in your eyes?
Sure. I mean, if you're talking about, you know, overall operations and being successful, it really, in my mind, comes down to your people and your strategy. Taking a step back from, you know, the ins and outs of the wealth management business and, you know, what software packages to pick, I think that comes after you focus on the high level of, you know, which people you have in your organization. Are they the right fit for your, you know, whether it's a, you know, cultural fit or the style of business you do, the clients you have, and then, you know, and how credentialed they are and how well, you know, just fit is really key there. And also, you know, in terms of strategy, it's, you know, what's your firm strategy, right? What client base are you focusing on? What are you looking to achieve? And I think once you answer those questions and you get the right people around you, then you can focus on software and workflows and processes. If you try to do it the other way around, in my opinion, it doesn't work very well. I think it's really, you know, your people and your strategy have to drive the whole thing, and the vision for your firm. And then around that core, you can build your processes.
So I have two questions for you. As much as you can go into it, tell me a little bit more about Bolton's strategy, because that's very interesting to me. And also, how do you select that operational structure in terms of the software? I know that a lot of people go into the selection of the software and try to adapt themselves into what the software requires, right? And try to flow with the process of the software. And that's when it's like dressing up. That's why I like your concept, because you're saying, no, first, you know, work with people, work with what your strategy is, and then select the tools you need to execute it.
Yeah, and I think that's the mistake I see, you know, happening a lot is that people pick this, whether it's a suite of software that, you know, purports to do everything, or whether it's sort of, oh, we found this really good software tool we like, now let's work around it. No. It's not the way it should work. At least in my opinion, I think it should be, you know, people and strategy first, and then build the software tools around that, you know, those people in that process and your strategy, you know, rather than the other way around. So at least for us, I guess I can speak to two levels, right? Because we have the internal, you know, intra department at Bolton, sort of the home office processes and software that goes along with that. And then we have the wealth management teams in the field and the software they use. So for our internal processes, it's exactly like I described. You know, we have our people, we have our strategy, and you know, our strategy is, our CEO likes to say, we're building Porsches, not Chevys. So what we're doing is we're building tailored wealth management services and a tailored platform to serve established high net, you know, high, you know, quality wealth management teams who manage high net worth and ultra high net worth clients globally. And we've chosen to focus in the LATAM marketplace simply because, you know, years ago, you know, after 08, the wirehouses started pulling back from being involved in certain countries, especially in Latin America, some more than others, some, you know, pulled out completely or mostly right away, some over time. And we've seen more and more restrictions on whether it's minimum household or account size, or, you know, you can't do business in this country anymore. And that's really driven a lot of growth in the independent space, where firms like Bolton can bring on those wealth management teams, which are, you know, very high quality client relationships that go back, you know, in some cases generations, and provide them a platform where they can serve the clients well and grow their businesses. Whereas at the wirehouses and the private banks, they're just seeing more and more contraction and, no, you can't do this, and no, you can't do business here. And we're going the opposite direction, looking for things that make sense from a business perspective. So, you know, all that to say, you know, that's our strategy. And you know, at the home office, we keep our headcount low. And the reason for that is it allows us to provide that customized service to our wealth management teams, which you know, again, we hand select our wealth management teams, because, like I said, we're, you know, the whole concept of building Porsches, not Chevys, is picking, you know, hand selecting high quality teams that, you know, we're fit for their business and they're fit for our firm. Because the worst thing you can have, in my opinion at least, is bad fit, right? You have either a cultural or a business mismatch, and then nobody's happy, you know, neither side. So we carefully select teams, and they obviously carefully select us as well, because they have their array of firms that they can choose to go to. That's our overall, I guess, overarching strategy. And we've built a team and, you know, technologies that are, you know, kind of built around that concept of, you know, high touch concierge level service. You know, just from a structural example, I oversee our back office services as chief operating officer, fully segmented service model where, you know, one person or team handled new accounts, another handled ACATS, another handled cashiering and products and services. And it was segmented by you know, type of transaction, so to speak. And what we found is that it worked fine, you know, for a number of years. And then as we went along and as we developed our strategy and developed our client base, you know, in the international kind of high net worth, high quality wealth management teams, you know, segment, we realized that that model didn't really work anymore. So what we did is we evolved into a sort of concierge account manager structure, where every wealth management team has one contact in operations who's their account manager, who manages their business from a service and back office perspective. And that person on our team gets to know that wealth management team, gets to know their clients, gets to know their needs. And, you know, so they're not calling a call center, they're calling a concierge member who knows about their business, who knows their needs, and knows the, you know, the specific kind of features of their book of business. And we've found that to be a much better, you know, going back to the concept of fit, right? You know, it really fits well into our client base and what they're looking to do. And also it fits into the level of service that they provide their clients, right? Because they know their clients, they have for years and years. Oh, this client prefers this, or this client prefers that. There's different, you know, obviously everybody has their own approach and then their own needs. And we're similarly able to provide that level of service out to our advisors. So it really, we found that sort of flow fits well. And you know, going back to the whole concept of technologies and software, we've built technologies and software both at the home office level and, you know, research best of breed technologies for the field to help that service flow happen and to, you know, create a good environment where you know, service can be provided both from, you know, from both to our reps and our advisors, and also from the advisors to the end clients.
How do you, I'm interested in that connection and that onboarding of all these advisors. How do you go about that? How do you find those teams and how do you work with them to onboard them and make them, you know, part of the Bolton structure?
Sure. So recently, you know, a lot of our recruiting efforts, it's really come through word of mouth and through our existing network of advisors. You know, we don't have a full-time recruiter, and we haven't in years. Obviously, you know, our CEO is very active in prospecting teams and talking to people and meeting with prospects, as am I and our president and other members of the team. That whole referral network structure works well for us because, by and large, the teams that are our internal, you know, our teams that are already with us are going to refer mostly fit within our structure because, you know, it's, you know, birds of a feather concept, right? So we found that to be a great driver of growth for us. And, on top of that, we have a referral, you know, incentive program that we offer our advisors. So there's not only an incentive, but I mean, a lot of our teams, what we try to create is concept of evangelists, right? We have people who we want to make sure that we're providing such a high level of service and creating such a good community of advisor teams that they want to go out and tell their friends in the industry, hey, if you're looking to go to independence, I've had a fantastic experience with Bolton. It really helped me grow my business. And that's how we want to drive growth at the AUM and advisor level.
I love that. That's exactly what we always talk about at Flatta with the customer journey. You know, the ultimate goal of a good customer experience, customer or any stakeholder experience,
right,
for a referral. And when you do it right, that's what happens. You don't need to go out and look for customers because you get referrals constantly.
Exactly. And you know, we do have, you know, in terms of our approach to recruiting, you know, we found that brand recognition is also very important. So we have put a lot of work and investment into, you know, advertising on you know, some of the top publications of you know, that our people are in their industry read, like CityWire Americas and Fund Society. And we found that to be very fruitful. You know, sometimes it's, hey, someone came to us because they saw our ad, right? Mm-hmm. But a lot of times, you know, what we found is that once we launched those ad campaigns, we had people who we were talking to saying, hey, I've heard of you guys. You know, whether they're coming from Merrill Lynch or Morgan Stanley, UBS, you know, you name it, they've seen our name out there. And the reason is because they've seen the logo, they've seen the name, whether it's subconsciously or more direct. And so we found that to be very fruitful in addition to, you know, hey, I also know one of your advisors, because, you know, the LATAM wealth management market, what's always struck me over the years is it's a very small world.
Yeah.
And everybody knows everybody.
Yeah, exactly. That's a conversation I have once and again with a lot of clients, that it's about, okay, who do I go to? Do I go only to advisors or do I also go to the clients and, you know, how do I do it? You know, what's my communication strategy? And I always answer that thing. You know, you do need your branding, your positioning, because it's a small world. And you need that, you know, that awareness in the market to generate more buzz. But then you have to take care of your advisor, for sure. So
Yeah. I completely agree. It's definitely that two-pronged approach of, you know, your brand's out there, but how is your brand perceived beyond its face? You know, that you build through, in my opinion, you know, great service to the advisors and to the clients, building, you know, a high quality platform with a broad array of products and services, and really taking care of people. That's how you, you know, not only retain people, but get more people beyond just, hey, your brand's out there in the market, but what does it mean to people? And, you know, what we're trying to build is, you know, Bolton is associated with high quality strength, you know, strength of partners, you know, quality of service.
You mentioned how Bolton got into the Latin American market after the crisis, because all of the big, you know, where everybody was leaving the market and the independents had this opportunity. And you certainly, you know, took advantage of this niche. Where do you think who are going to be the winners after this crisis? Honestly, most financial companies are not doing that bad. Most haven't been hurt that much yet.
Right.
Where do you see it?
Well, I mean, I go back to, again, quality of service and listen to your clients. I mean, that's the firms who are going to win are the ones who are always listening to their clients' needs and, you know, keeping their finger to the pulse of what's happening, both, in the financial industry, whether it's regulatory or service or products or otherwise, but also, you know, what's happening with your client base. What do they need? What are they looking for, especially in a time of crisis? And I really just think that those who focus on their clients as opposed to, you know, hey, we get this cool technology. You know, and technology is great. I don't want to discount that. We certainly have, you know, a wide array at Bolton. But it's, you know, if you don't have any clients.
No, you have you.
Exactly.
Another question I would like to ask is in general, like more inspirational. If you had a friend come to you and say, hey, I'm starting my own asset management firm right now. Why would you say, look, make sure you do 1, 2, 3 right?
I mean, what I would say is focus on, you know, find a niche of clients that you can serve well. And, you know, define your competitive advantages. I would, if I have kind of one phrase of advice to anybody who's starting out, it's don't try to be all things to all people. That's a recipe for failure. Focus on.
That's one thing we can definitely agree on, being, you know, preaching that to a choir for 20 years.
Yeah. Yeah, no, it's, I mean, it's so true. It's, if you want to focus on, like, we have, you know, concierge service, high net worth clients, you know, we're happy to add, you know, 1, 2, 3, 4 good, really quality situations per year, as opposed to adding 100 advisors per year. You know, and that's not against any firm who wants to add 100 advisors a year. There are certainly those who do that, and that's fine. That's their strategy. That's just not our strategy. And I think knowing what you don't want to focus on is as important as knowing what you do want to focus on.
Yeah, learning to say no, key.
Exactly. It's a very, very powerful thing, yeah. The ability to say no.
In all aspects of life, for sure. So, tell me something that. True to you and nobody agrees with you on?
So this is an odd one because my background is mathematics and statistics. That's what I majored in college. So I'm generally a very logical or rational thinker. But the one thing I would say, I mean, I'm saying that almost nobody agrees with me on, I really don't know. But I would say that there's no such thing as a purely rational decision.
Right.
As much as you like to think that, you know, you go through the process of making a decision, and, you know, you go through the statistics and numbers and, you know, everybody's different. So everybody's going to focus differently. But at some level, emotion and personal experience is going to inform a step along the way. So in that sense, I think that it's, you know, there's just no such thing as purely rational, logical decision. Human emotion always enters the equation at some point, no matter how small or large.
I like that. Actually, I do agree with you on that one.
Well, maybe I'm wrong. Maybe people
agree. Okay, we'll do some little fun things to close the interview.
Sure.
So what is your favorite word?
Ah, God, there's a lot of them in the English language that I enjoy, but I really like the word esoteric. The reason for that is I always have to remind myself that not everybody knows what you're talking about.
Okay.
And I've learned that the hard way. I mentioned my math background, but I also came up at Bolton on the tech side, managing our IT systems and our IS systems. And that's you learned a very quick lesson that not everybody speaks the language. Not everybody knows the lingo. So, you know, speaking, you know, in an esoteric manner doesn't get you very far.
Yeah, keep things simple, right? That's one.
Exactly. Explain it so that everybody can understand what you're talking about.
What famous people would you like to meet?
In another life, I was a musician. So, in college, I used to play gigs a lot.
They say that math and music are very related. So, be a good musician.
I've heard that. Yeah. I don't know if I'm good or bad, but I just enjoyed it.
Good.
But on that vein, I mean, obviously it's impossible now, unfortunately, but I would love to have met Tom Petty, who, you know, I love his music, but the thing that always got me about him is he wrote songs that are so simple and yet so complicated at the same time. And just sort of, you know, wanted to pick his brain on how, what's your approach to writing a song? It's just,
right. Yeah. Okay, final one. If you had a billboard all for yourself, what would you put in it? Whatever you want.
I mean, my answer is probably informed by the current situation, but I would just have the word persevere on it. Nice. So it's sort of a reminder to everybody, no matter what you're going through, no matter what's happening right now, it's just persevere. And I think that, you know, I don't know. I think that's a good message.
Everybody needs a breather right now, right?
I think so, yes.
Well, Matt, it was such a pleasure meeting you, and this was so much fun. Thank you. I really appreciate your time.
Well, I appreciate you, Alejandro. Thank you so much for having me on. And I look to, you know, continue in the future, and I'll definitely be tuning into your podcast.